Hey y'all, I'm Carrie.
Hey y'all, I'm Mandy.
And this is Monstrous.
This episode contains topics and language that may not be suitable for all listeners, and topics that may be triggering for some. Listener discretion is advised.
All right, you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay, so I told you yesterday, or the day before, whatever, that I had some stuff to tell you.
Right.
Okay, so you know the Gilgo Beach case, right? Uh-uh. Or the Long Island serial killer?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so I am behind on some of the podcasts that I listen to. And I heard this, and then I had to go look it up. So, on December 17th of 2024, so last month, authorities had announced that Rex Humerman had been charged with a seventh murder.
Seven?
Yep. Which, Rex Humerman is the accused Gilgo Beach or Long Island serial killer. So he was originally arrested in July of 2023. Then they added, you know, six counts.
Right.
Last year, they linked him to another woman.
Damn.
Yeah. And they are still working to connect him to the other woman found along the beach.
Oh, shit.
Because, you know, there were a ton found.
Right.
And no idea, was it the same person, or did Long Island have two active serial killers at the same time?
That's crazy.
Yep. So, this case has had detectives working for, do you know how long they've been working on this case?
No.
Do you remember? Over a decade.
Damn.
Trying to solve it. Yep. So, like I just said, there's been a ton of bodies found. And he hasn't been linked to all of them. But, clearly, he's slowly being linked to several. And, as I just told you, the number is now up to seven.
Wow. That's crazy.
So, as of today, his known linked victims. Now, he is the accused killer. He has not been to trial for any of them. But as of today, his known victims are Melissa Bartholomew, Megan Waterman, Maureen Brainerd Barnes, Amber Costello, Jessica Taylor, Sandra Castilla, and the newest is Valerie Mack.
Wow.
Yep. And I'm sure that there will be more added down the line.
Sounds like it.
Like, it's sad, but at least these women that they found over a decade ago have their names back. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's just crazy that there's seven of them and there's still so many that have not been named because they haven't been able to figure out who they are.
That's sad.
It's crazy to me. But DNA is a thing now and, you know, so hopefully. So, as you know, this case was a big one, especially since he's been arrested. It's a huge one. Many podcasts have covered it. Most people know about it. But if you or any of our listeners don't know all of those details, I can cover it. I can do a deep dive on it. Everybody just has to let us know. Send us an email. Leave a comment on the Facebook page or the post for this episode. We can comment on YouTube or in the review section of whatever platform you're listening to.
Okay.
Oh my God. This one I have to look into. I haven't found a whole lot of information yet, so I've got to look into it more. So I have to look more into this one. Oh my God. Apparently, they found 12 bodies near the U.S. and Mexico border.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Hmm.
And I just seen this within the last week. So I've got to dig into it and see if they've released any more information. But I haven't found anything else.
Right.
The 12 bodies buried near the U.S.-Mexico border.
That'd be a good one.
Then, not long ago, okay, they found 20 skulls, 20 head bones, skulls, near the Mexico border. What the fuck is going on in Mexico?
Right.
Jesus. Like, there, I know there's a ton of people missing over there. I know that. But what is going on that you have to bury the people that you decide should not be alive near the U.S. border? What the fuck is going on over there? Get it together. Okay. This one had me fucking screaming, dude. So on January 9th, 2025, what, 2 weeks ago?
Yeah.
A Wisconsin judge granted conditional release to 22-year-old Morgan Geyser, who has spent the last 11 years in a psychiatric hospital. So that name probably does not ring a bell for you or most of our listeners. But what about the Slender Man stabber?
Oh.
For those of you that have no idea what I'm talking about, I'm going to give you a quick recap. And I can definitely do a deep dive. If anybody wants us to, just let us know. In 2014, Megan Geyser and one of her newfound friends, I do not have her name written down in front of me, went out with their friend Peyton, who was Megan's best friend. She even said in interview clippings, Peyton was the only friend she had for a very long time because Morgan was, you know, quote unquote, a weird kid. They took her out into the woods and they stabbed her repeatedly. And Morgan is the one that did the stabbing. Okay. 12 years old, she stabbed her best friend 19 times.
Jesus.
And it was done to try to get entry into the fake world of Slender Man. In order to get into that world, you have to make a sacrifice.
What the hell?
Yep. So if she was dangerous enough at 12 years old to stab and kill her best friend, why do you think she's not that dangerous now?
Yeah, like she's worse now.
Like, I know that kids do, you know, their brains are still developing and they're easy manipulated and, you know, all of that. But I'm sorry, if you can stab someone, like, imagine, because you're not just making one motion 19 times. It's double that.
Right.
Because you have to go back and then down again. Imagine making that motion 19 times.
That's insane.
And then the other girl is just sitting over here like, oh, you know, just standing here, not doing shit, cheering her on.
Just watching.
Yeah. So it's like, I get that she was a kid and all of that, but she is not aged out of crime. She's 22. She can go live a perfectly normal life at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And still hurt somebody else. And what about Peyton? You know what I mean? She survived a very brutal and completely planned attack at 12 years old. And now she has to live the rest of her life knowing that both of the girls that attacked her are free.
Yeah, I couldn't do it.
Like, she has to live the rest of her life in fear because you think this girl is psychologically, quote unquote, cured? Like, the fuck is wrong with Wisconsin people? Stay the hell out of Wisconsin, okay? Just like people need to stay the hell out of Long Island and stay the hell out of Washington. Because there's something different in their water over there. Okay, so that's all that I have today. I'll do some looking and see if I can find out about the bodies in Mexico. we can discuss that next time. But I thought I would share that with you. I can do a deep dive on either one of those if you or any of the listeners want me to, or you can do it, whatever. Okay, so now for our case. So it's Black History Month. At the time that you're listening to this, it is Black History Month. And we're going to cover it in the true crime world for this episode. So there's a lot of racial disparities when it comes to our justice system, as we all know. But this is especially true when it comes to wrongful convictions. And that is the topic of today's case. The statistics for wrongful convictions are high. And when it comes to race, those statistics are profoundly disturbing and proof of a deep-rooted issue. Studies of those incarcerated estimated that between 4 to 6% of those that are currently incarcerated in the U.S. prisons right now are actually innocent.
That's insane.
So in other words, 1 out of every 20 criminal cases tried in the U.S. court system results in a wrongful conviction. And that's wrongful convictions as a whole. That's not broke up by race.
Right.
Yeah. Which you would think in today's justice system, with all of the technology and everything that we have now, this wouldn't happen, but it does. So innocent until proven guilty is a presumption of innocence. It is a fundamental rule within our legal system. Paired with the prosecution having to prove guilt beyond a reasonable doubt, it is supposed to ensure that wrongful convictions don't happen. But despite this, the unchecked biases that are present within our justice system among those with power cause them to presume that some people are less innocent than others. The legacy of the racial injustice in America involving white supremacy and racial violence has evolved into the presumption that people of color are suspicious, dangerous, and are all criminals, and that young Black men are to be feared and should be locked away before they can hurt anyone. So at this point, our criminal justice system seems to have become more about securing a conviction rather than convicting the right person to ensure justice for the victim and their family, along with ensuring the safety of the community. So at this point, it's like, oh, we're going to close this out. Who cares if it's the right person or not?
Just hurry up and get it done and over with.
Exactly. It's all about the conviction rates for prosecutors rather than actual justice. So, of course, not all Americans that are wrongfully convicted and wrongfully incarcerated are Black. We all know that. Wrongful convictions do happen to any person in any race, but the system that causes these wrongful convictions to happen to begin with is rooted deep to the core with racism and racial bias. So 60% of the U.S. population are white. 13% of that population is Black. And the remaining 27% is made up of Indian, Alaskan, Asian, or Hawaiian racial descent. Which I just want to throw a fun fact at you, okay? It has nothing to do with the case. But so you know how we all say Hawaii?
Yeah.
Do you know how it's actually pronounced?
How?
Hawaii.
Really?
Yeah. If you go to Hawaii, Hawaiian natives, that's how they say it. It's Hawaii.
Hmm.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, I didn't know that.
America just takes everything, just fucks it all up, don't we? So of the 60% of white Americans that make up the population, about 38% are incarcerated. While Black Americans, who only make up 13% of the population, make up 40% of those that are incarcerated.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's insane.
And then just under 60% of that 40% have been exonerated by DNA for their convictions. Yep. Mandy's just shaking her head. She doesn't know what to say. Yep. So innocent Black people are more likely to be wrongfully convicted of sexual assault, murder, and drug-related crimes than that of white people. They are 3.5 times more likely to be convicted of sexual crime, 7 times more likely to be convicted of murder, and 12 times more likely to be convicted of a drug-related crime, even if they are guilty of their accused crimes. White people are punished at a far less rate than that of black people.
That's insane. That's crazy.
Yep. So even if you got a white person here, a black person here, and they are both guilty of doing the exact same thing, the white person, 9 times out of 10, is punished far less. Yep. How that makes sense, I don't know. My brain can't go there. If you do something wrong, wrong is wrong. No matter who you are. And there's a consequence for that. And that consequence should be the same one for everybody. But that's not the topic of today. So we'll save that for another episode because we could go on a whole tangent about that. So the things we see and what we just discussed isn't something that's new. The racial disparate treatment in the U.S. criminal justice system have ravaged throughout our entire history. The Jim Crow era barred Black Americans from voting, which then also barred them from serving on juries. During this time, the police, prosecution, attorneys on both sides, the judges, and the juries were all white. Cross-racial misidentifications, forced confessions, all-white juries, and outright racism led to countless wrongful convictions. From the 1870s to the 1960s, a large number of Black defendants that had allegations made against them from a white victim never even made it to trial. So now that I've laid the groundwork for why today's topic is an important one to discuss, I'm going to tell you about a few of these said cases. The few I have today are not the beginning or the end of the list of Black Americans that have been wrongfully convicted, but it sheds a light on a very large problem that we have within our country. So in our first case, the automatic presumption of innocence was hardly present. In 1906, Ed Johnson was arrested for sexually assaulting a white female in Chattanooga, Tennessee. The woman had allegedly been knocked unconscious with a leather strap before being assaulted further. Johnson had become the suspect after a witness had claimed that he saw Johnson carrying a leather strap, but he denied ever owning one and even provided multiple alibi witnesses for his trial. Despite this, though, Ed Johnson was convicted by an all-white jury and was sentenced to death. The U.S. Supreme Court granted a stay of execution, but following this, a mob broke out inside the jail and brutally murdered Johnson by public hanging. Ed Johnson's tombstone reflects his said innocence, and it states, quote, "God bless you all, I am a innocent man." 94 years later, in February of 2000, his conviction was finally overturned by Judge Doug Meyer, who found that Johnson had not received a fair trial due to the all-white jury and the sitting judge's refusal to move the trial outside of Chattanooga. Ed Johnson became the first Black American to be awarded a stay of execution by the U.S. Supreme Court. Following Ed's case for the first time, the Supreme Court, the county, the country as a whole, and President Teddy Roosevelt reacted fast and with outrage. They investigated the murder of Ed, and the Supreme Court held their first and only criminal trial. In the end, they found a handful of perpetrators guilty for Ed's death. From Ed's case came good, though. Hamilton County Sheriff Joseph Shipp and 5 co-defendants were found guilty of contempt of court for failing to enforce the stay of execution, and they all spent time in prison. The case of U.S. versus Shipp set a landmark precedent for the federal oversight of civil rights issues, which is still seen and used in courtrooms today. More than 100 years after Ed Johnson's case, the Ed Johnson Project was created, and it was created as a community committee within Chattanooga that works to promote racial healing and reconciliation for not only Ed, but for all of those that are wrongfully convicted.
He lost his life for no reason.
Yep. Which I know that that things were harder then because they didn't have like the shit that we have today. All right. But his alibis were just completely ignored. They took eyewitness testimony, and we all know that you can't solely depend on that. You know what I mean? People make shit up. They forget stuff.
Right.
People look similar in a lot of ways, especially in situations where it's fast and chaotic. So 25 years later, the Scottsboro boys' convictions raised awareness about racial injustice and shook the civil rights movement. In 1931, aboard a freight train traveling through Scottsboro, Alabama, a fight broke out between two separate groups, one group white and one group black. The police aboard the train broke up the fight and round up the group of black boys, and by the time they were done, they had arrested 9 of them, aged between 12 to 19. Following their arrest, 2 white girls had came forward and said that they had been gang raped on the train by these said boys. All 9 boys said they were innocent, but no one believed them. After 4 days, 4 separate trials, and 4 all-white juries, 8 of the 9 boys were convicted and sentenced to death. Each of the 8 boys, of course, filed appeals to fight against their convictions. And combined, these appeals took over 20 years to complete.
Now that's crazy.
20 years worth of appeals, just trying to prove that they were innocent. Eventually, their efforts do pay off, though. After 20 years, they finally get a new trial. During this retrial, one of the said victims came forward and stated that the entire rape allegation was fabricated. Here's another one where I wish you guys could see Mandy's face, because her eyes just got bigger than her head. Yeah. So by her own testimony, these 8 young boys were in fact innocent. So that should be the end of it, right?
Right.
The boys should be set free with their convictions overturned. Well, if you thought that was the only logical thing to happen, you would be wrong. Despite this, once again, an all-white jury returned guilty verdicts for all 8 boys.
What?
Yeah. So after this, the boys continued to face multiple retrials, and eventually, they did win. All 8 of the Scottsboro boys either had their charges dropped or their sentences were reduced to lesser crimes. It just took over 2 decades for that to happen. So this was not accomplished because of the obvious innocence of the boys, but instead because in 2013, an Alabama legislature passed 2 bills that acknowledged that boys, now men, were, quote, victims in a gross injustice. These bills did 2 things. First, it gave a resolution to the ongoing case. It exonerated all 9 of the accused boys. Second, it created a law that made it possible to grant posthumous pardons to the Scottsboro boys. So, for those that have no idea what a posthumous pardon is, that is a pardon that is given after death. So, these boys, aged 12 to 19, spent the rest of their lives on death row for a crime they never committed. Nearly every one of those 9 boys grew up in prison for a crime they were not responsible for. And it was not until after they had all died that they were declared innocent.
That's crazy.
Yep. And that happens more often than you think.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah. So during this same time that these boys are fighting to prove their innocence, another major case was unfolding. One that would lead to a landmark Supreme Court decision. This case addressed concerns brought up about confessions being obtained through violence. I'm talking about Brown versus Mississippi. In 1934, a white farmer was killed in Mississippi and three black sharecroppers were arrested for his murder. Ed Brown, Arthur Ellington, and Henry Shields were all beat and tortured until they confessed to committing the murder. The police didn't deny torturing these men either. They were clear, could clearly see that each one was in pain while they sat through their trials. 2 years after their convictions in 1936, the U.S. Supreme Court overturned each one, stating that the coerced confessions could not constitute evidence in a court of law and each man was fully exonerated. This landmark case paved the way for the ruling in Miranda versus Arizona decades later. Black men are not the only ones that are wrongfully convicted. As I said before, anyone can be. That be both genders and all races. Black women, though black men are subject to unequal treatment in the criminal justice system, are often wrongfully convicted as well. In 1945, the state of Georgia executed Lena Baker for killing a white man that had kidnapped and sexually assaulted her. She claimed her action of shooting him was done so in self-defense, despite the fact that Lena had not only been kidnapped but also assaulted by this man. Her claim was not believed. She was convicted of murder by a jury of all white men. So, you have 12 white men that said, "Oh, she's guilty for killing a white man." Yep. And she became the first woman to ever be executed by the electric chair in Georgia. 60 years later, in 2005, the Georgia Board of Pardons and Paroles granted Lena a pardon, stating that the state of Georgia had committed a grievous error in her case. Which I would say, yeah. I'm not saying that she, you know, the murder she committed was okay. I'm not saying that. But she had been kidnapped and sexually assaulted, and that is how she was able to survive and get away, and then you kill her for that.
Right.
Like, I don't understand how what you're doing is any better. But I don't know. Many people believe that wrongful convictions based on racial bias are solely a Southern phenomenon, but it isn't. In 1948, the Trenton Six, also known as the Scottsboro Boys of the North, were arrested for killing a white furniture store owner in Trenton, New Jersey. Eyewitness statements regarding the assailants were spotty, to say the least. These accounts ranged everywhere from 2 to 3 black men to 2 to 4 light-skinned teenagers. So didn't nobody know what these people looked like. The 6 men that were arrested didn't match any of the descriptions given to the police. 5 of the Trenton 6 signed confessions. They were all inconsistent. And they maintained throughout the trial that they were coerced into confessing. And all 6 of them had rock-solid alibis. Despite this, though, an all-white jury convicted the Trenton 6 and sentenced them to death. After filing appeals of all 6 convictions, they were overturned due to the weak evidence and the perjury committed by the medical examiner. Yeah. I know it's you expect witnesses to do that. You don't expect a medical examiner to get on the stand. Right. So each of the 6 men now had to face retrials. After several of these retrials, 4 of the Trenton 6 were acquitted and 2 were found guilty of a lesser crime. Is a lot. So these cases that I've told you about, along with so many others, show decades of the racial bias that runs deep through our criminal justice system. While every criminal justice system on the planet is only as effective as the accuracy and the integrity of its officers, sadly, no criminal justice system is perfect because each one of them is ran by humans and we all make bad calls and make mistakes. But being human and making a human error is no excuse when someone's life is on the line. When it comes to someone's life, the stakes are at the highest. And when someone is wrongfully convicted, the greatest error is made. Studies conducted by the Innocent Project proves that 1% of those convicted of all crimes are actually innocent. That is 20,000 innocent people of all races currently incarcerated in the U.S. And those numbers are astounding when it's broken down by race. According to the National Registry of Exonerations Race and Wrongful Convictions Report from September of 2022, racially motivated false confessions in the U.S. have reached a shockingly high level. Okay, are you ready for these numbers?
Yeah.
In 2017 alone, 1,900 cases were discovered where a person of color was wrongfully convicted and later exonerated. While in 2022, this number had skyrocketed nearly 70% higher to 3,249 newly discovered wrongfully convicted cases.
That's insane. That's ridiculous.
Yep. In 1 year, 12 months, they found over 3,200 wrongfully convicted cases. Each wrongfully convicted case is a result of corruption on all levels. These numbers have only been able to be estimated within the last couple of decades, and we only know of the most prominent wrongful convictions because of the media and the public outrage that we see everywhere. There are so many cases that we don't know about, and honestly, we will never know how many Black Americans have really been falsely convicted and executed. Thanks to the work done by the innocent projects across the country, innocent people are being set free, especially Black Americans that are currently incarcerated. The number of exonerations continues to grow every year, and this growth is not small. In 2021, there were a total of 132 people exonerated, 81 of those being Black. In 2022, there were 250 more exonerations, and of those 250, about 150 of those were Black men and women. In 2023, there were 153 more exonerations that took place, and 93 of those were Black. And then just last year, in 2024, about 145 exonerations happened, and 88 of those were Black men and women. As of 2022, Black people accounted for 53% of the 3,200 people on the list of exonerated. So that means out of 3,200 people that have been exonerated as of August of 2022, 1,696 of those were Black men and women.
Those are crazy numbers.
Yep. Way higher than you would expect them to be.
Right.
So from 1989 to 2024, there have been a total of 3,639 people exonerated. And many people would think in the age of DNA, that's why. But that is actually very wrong. Most people, in fact, are not exonerated through DNA.
Really?
Yep. Of that 3,639 exonerations, only 609 of those have happened because of DNA. And in those cases, it's easy to say, okay, well, you know, we didn't have the DNA technology and everything else pointed to them, but we couldn't really test it to prove they were wrong. Okay. That happens. It's very possible that because at one point they were only able to test and see the blood type, but not actually match it. Well, they have the same blood type. All this evidence points to this person. It would make sense. It happens. Okay? Maybe that's what those were. Probably not, but benefit of the doubt here. But that means that the remaining 3,030 people wrongfully convicted from 1989 to 2024 was done so because of bias, tunnel vision, or some other bias factor. And when it's broken down to see how many of those people were Black, the number is astounding. So of the 3,693 wrongfully convicted people, 2,220 of those were Black men and women. That is 32,750 years lost for those men and women in total. And that is 19,978 years lost for Black American families across our country, with many of those exonerations not happening until the wrongfully convicted had already died. These wrongful convictions can happen to anyone of any race and of any location, but the rates of wrongful convictions of Black Americans is astounding and appalling. This is an epidemic that has plagued our country for centuries. And now in 2025, we as Americans must do better to end the suffering forced upon innocent Americans because of the idiocy and racism of others. So if you yourself have a case that you would like the Innocent Project to look into, if you would like to donate, volunteer for the Innocent, or just more want more information, I have the website linked, which will be in the episode description. I'm also going to put it on our Facebook page. And that has the contact information, websites, all of that for each state's innocent projects. Some states only have one. Some states have multiple. It just kind of depends on where you live. This is not a one-person problem. It is an us problem. It is a problem that our entire country has, and it is fixable. But we must come together as one in order to solve the problem that our country created. And that's it. That's all I got for this one.
That's insane. Those numbers are crazy.
Yep. And there's a lot more wrongful convictions and cases, obviously, than I listed. It's just we'd be here for like 50 years if we covered all of them. Yep. The numbers is what kind of like blows, because everybody knows that wrongful convictions happen.
Right.
You know, and everybody's like, I don't understand how. How do they happen? This is how they happen. Tunnel vision, racial bias, not following the evidence, making evidence fit the case. It happens a lot more often than people realize it does. And our case next week will shine a little bit more of a light on that.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Because it's about, is a wrongful conviction as well. And it'll kind of shine more of a light into how they happen, one way that they happen. Let me say that way, one way that it happens, and how detrimental they are. All right. So anything else before we sign off on this one?
No, that's just insane. That's crazy.
Yeah. Like, you know, it happens, but then when you have the numbers right in your face.
Yeah.
It really, really makes you see how big of an issue it really is.
I know.
It's awful. Okay, so we'll be back next week for an episode. As always, our sources and photos for the episode can be found on our Facebook page. That link is in our episode description, along with the Innocent Project website link as well. Please make sure you give us a rate and a review. Don't forget to subscribe so you get notifications when our new episodes are released. We hope you keep listening and remember to
watch for monsters
and don't kill people. Bye, y'all.
Bye, y'all.